The name of this lecture is Cause and Effect. The first part of this talk, I'll try to give you a few buttons. Now, I know that you have all of your buttons, all of you. But there are a few buttons which can be pushed in cases which produce most remarkable results. One of the first buttons is mentioned in a little book, Advanced Procedure and Axioms, which is completed as far as its mimeographing is concerned, and the printer was late with the covers. It will be available tomorrow. I had a copy of it, which I was going to hold up like this, so you just imagine there's a copy of it here. I'll be much obliged to you. And Johnny Reb came through from Louisiana, and he was going right straight on through to New Jersey tonight, and in view of the terrific dark ignorance which exists in that middle Atlantic state, I gave it to him to take along. The whole subject of push buttons, very interesting. There's one set of push buttons which could be said to loosen up a case, and another set which could be said to resolve a case. Somewhere there's one. There's just one. And you push it, and the pre-clear has large 10,000-volt arcs come out of his ears, spins twice, screams, and is clear. It may be that this push button, in this array of push buttons, this one push button exists. But certainly, we have the modus operandi. Now, by a push button, of course, I mean that computation or that foible or quirk of the human mind which gets wrong and which can be righted merely by touching one factor. The optimum push button would do what I just said with the preclear. This second battery of push buttons take a little longer. Now, some of these push buttons are they're very, very general. In fact, the only ones that I'm specializing in now are those which hit, as far as I know now, every case. There is a good and adequate reason to believe that there is just one somewhere. But certainly the secondary battery is such that it will, one way or another, find what we could call the computation on a case very rapidly. Now, one of those buttons is the trust-distrust button. We work on this basis, that what a preclear is doing is across all the dynamics. That is to say, preclear does something to himself, he automatically does it to every other dynamic. If he does something to any dynamic, he automatically does it to himself. Now, you're aware of this. Before I erase this, I take good note. The state of New York finally broke down. And with this new process, with this book, the auditor, plus a self-help book that can be used, there's a distinct possibility that we can treat an alcoholic for a couple of $100. And that fact that they cost the state far in excess of this per alcoholic every year, it would be a very considerable saving to a state in order to do something about alcoholics. We know better than to appeal to the humanitarianism of government. So anyway, here are your various dynamics. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now, each individual is made up of a central thrust through existence, which we could call survive. Now, actually, we can, for the first time, refer to it as something else than survive, which I will talk to you about a little later. We call this drive, this thrust through existence, survival. It's the effort on the part of the organism to survive. Now, that's just one. But we take a look at the one, we put a magnifying glass on it, we find that in this one thrust, there are actually eight thrusts. And the first dynamic, of course, is the dynamic of self. Second dynamic has two compartments. One is sex, and the other is the rearing of children. These two things are relatively, they're very closely connected. Nobody's done any spontaneous combustion for a long time. Anyway, three is groups. The group. And that's any kind of a group. Any kind. Temporary or permanent groups. Political groups. Social groups. Anything like this. That's three. Four is the dynamic of all mankind. Five is that one pertaining to life. Just life in general. That's vegetables, fish, any kind of life. Trees. Six is the dynamic we call MEST. Matter, energy, space, and time. That's the material universe. The individual actually has a thrust for the survival of the material universe. We talk to people about some science blowing up the world these days, and they raise a fuss. Now, actually, they'd raise a fuss whether man was there or not. If you said that they were going to knock 29 stars out of the sky and make them disappear forever, people get upset. The seventh dynamic is the dynamic we call theta, that is the life static, that is the stuff from which life emanates. And eight over here, we write this way. Eight on the side for infinity, which would be the dynamic of a supreme being, a prime mover, unmoved, a creator, whatever you want to call it. All right, he seems to have, by inspection of man himself, a thrust in each one of these departments. One individual does. In other words, an individual is interested in the survival of groups on a parity with his own survival. We have been taught, some of us were able to resist it, we've been taught that everybody is very self-centered, that a little baby, for instance, is his own world and that's all he is. And this is a cute thing to say, but it doesn't happen to be true. Little baby doesn't express his survival along these various lines for very good reason. He doesn't talk. But you get a little two-year-old and you start asking about the rest of the human race. This would be the comparison between the line Dianetics has taken and the line which has been taken in the past. The line that's been taken in the past is you read a textbook in order to form a textbook so that somebody else can read that textbook in order to get another textbook. Textbook, textbook. You take the curve of sleep. There is a sleep curve which is printed in books about the mind down at the library, which has been riding around for 30 or 40 years, and it's wrong. It's completely wrong. It shows depth of sleep after various hours of slumber. And that curve, somebody dreamed it up one day after reading a textbook and did the curve and then handed it out, and they've been printing it ever since. And a young fellow working for his doctorate almost got himself thrown out of his profession, tarred, feathered, and so forth, because what he did, horror of horrors, was go out and measure the depth of sleep after a certain number of hours. And he found out it was quite variable and that the curve was entirely false. And he published this as his doctor's thesis, and the university gave his doctorate hurriedly and got rid of him, and nobody's ever heard of him since. But anyway, this business of reading a book to write a book so that somebody else can read the book to write a book is apt to get a whole field of research out here someplace in the abstract that has nothing to do with the real universe, nothing to do with actual behavior. You can take any one of these codified observations that have been made, and you take a good, solid look at the human race. Not at a book, but at the race itself. And you learn a great deal. A two-year-old child is very intelligible on the substance of groups, his family, and what he wants to do on father's part and so forth, if you can get into communication with him. Grown-ups very seldom try. They say, coochie, coochie, you have a piece of candy. Little kid goes wandering off. He doesn't have words to fit exactly what he's thinking about. But if you just sit down with him and try to talk to him and let him talk down to you a little bit, you learn some amazing things. But that's, by the way, a trick. Let him talk down to you. All right. We've got dynamics 1 to 8 are expressed even in a little child. A child has a lot of trouble. The reason they say a child is self-centered, the child is actually in trouble. He gets born into this body without his motor controls connected. And if anybody took one of you out here to Boeing and sat you down in a four-motored bomber and said, okay, bud, fly it, you'd look at those throttles and gas gauges and landing flaps and generator and oil. What do you push to get what done? Well, a baby learns this very gradually. Actually, inherently knows where these motor controls are. But the trouble is, he keeps fishing for them. Eventually, he finds, with a great deal of relief, you ever watch a baby find his hand, find out how to move his hand? He'll put his hand up and he'll look at it. He'll finally find out it goes this way. Oh, he's very pleased. He's very pleased. He's got that one connected. Then he'll get his fingers connected. He'll find out where their buttons are. And he gets all his coordination done. It takes him a couple of years to get his coordination done. And it doesn't say at the same time that he's trying to lick a piece of the physical universe called himself. And he goes on from there. But as soon as you knock out one of these, take a reverse test, as soon as you knock out one of these dynamics on a human being, and you say, for this individual, this dynamic cannot possibly exist, boy, you get trouble, because they all get knocked out. They come down on the same level, in other words. If you cut out half of one dynamic, you cut out half of the rest of the dynamics. In other words, this package of dynamics is very vital to the survival of an individual. You get an individual, for instance, who is going around beating the drum and saying, there is no such thing as God, and I will shoot the guy that says so. Well, he'll get away with it for a while, and he'll keep moting. But one day, he strikes some sort of phenomenon or other, whether it's rigged up or otherwise, doesn't matter. But he all of a sudden becomes convinced there is God, having spent a lot of his life in proving that there wasn't, and this is a failure on the eighth dynamic, and he'll go out through the bottom of the barrel. Bing. His error, you see, was not in being consistent about the whole thing. He was saying there was an eighth dynamic, and as long as he successfully said so, he was all right. So the second factor enters in on this, is you can do anything you want with any one of these dynamics, except fail. Don't fail. You can say that, supposing you join a monastery someplace and practice a flagellation every day and practically kill yourself 24 hours a day. That's the first dynamic, terrific abuse, something like that. Well, if that's the way it's going, and if that's what you're doing, for heaven's sakes, don't suddenly find out that it was not worthwhile, because that is a failure. That's a failure. In other words, there's a consistency involved here, definite consistency. Now, on your fourth dynamic, man goes around saying, man is no good. Don't let him ever find out man is some good. A change will take place. Right now, you have a whole society which is educated along the line of man thinks for himself alone. People have to be forced, whipped, beaten, and educated to have a third dynamic. They have to be jailed. They have to be sent to school. They have to be punished, fined, taxed, made to go to the polls and vote Democratic. All of these various things have to be done in order to make a person have a third denarii. In other words, they're working like mad to build something which is already there. And you take away all of these big structures of socialization of the individual, and you find lying behind these structures a much prettier structure and a much stauncher one than any artificial structure which was being built. Same way on the fourth dynamic. You ever know a little girl that thought only cats were fit to associate with and that man was no good? Well, there are such people, I assure you. Men are no good. Men are cruel. They're beasts. They do terrible things. And the human race is no good and man is no good. But cats and dogs and dear little dumb animals, these are what are nice. And in other words, throw it all over on the fifth dynamic. Now, she'll be all right, and she can go on living until that concept fails on her, because it's an artificial concept. Man can do almost anything he wants to these dynamics as long as he's consistent about it. The second he gets inconsistent along any line, he's in bad shape. Therefore, you have a society at the present time which is thoroughly educated into stand up for number one, nobody else is going to, man is not interested in anything but himself, everybody is very selfish, that people will only do it for themselves. We'll read Dale Carnegie, the great Dale Carnegie. How to propitiate in order to get something from number one was the first title of the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. He had to change it, though. It wouldn't sell the other way. It just tells you how to get around people so that you can get something for yourself. That's great. The society is sold on this idea. Now somebody comes along and tells the society, hey, you're interested in other things. It's only because they actually are interested in other things that they will buy this at all. They suddenly look at this, they can see it. They can see it demonstrated. As long as they can see that it's demonstrable, why, unfortunately, it'll cave in some earlier concepts. So you can only actually carry this to the limit that it can repair the damage it does, because it can actually do some damage, and that it changes the consistency of an individual. He has believed all his life that he's only standing up for number one, and you come along and prove to him in 2 quick seconds. Well, if that is so, why did you work for 3.5 weeks last month in order to make your Boy Scout troop do better? And he's, well, their fathers are all in business, and he knows that isn't the reason. He's stuck with it. The factor is there. It's making a man look at it. Sometimes it's difficult. All right, you take this whole array of dynamics. Beautiful, embracive set, by the way. I, if anybody knows of any more, let them tell me. But that seems to be about the score. All right. Number one, the individual, as number one, assaults three. He assaults some group, and he says they're no good, like me assaulting psychiatry. Except I know it's a gag. I know we actually own psychiatry. So he assaults number three, and he goes on assaulting number three. Well, now, as long as he gets away with assaulting number three, he's going to be all right. He can go on with the assault as long as he keeps winning. But all of a sudden, he fails in that assault. Boom. Actually, what pulls up in him is number three, but what it manifests itself as to you and me is number one. You see, it's three itself that pulls up. He fails on three. And it pulls up the whole strata. A fellow goes out here and he starts hitting a horse over the head. That's number five. He starts hitting a horse over the head and calling the horse names in order to make the horse obey. And the horse obeys, and the horse obeys, and the horse obeys. But one day, in spite of the fact the number of times he hits the horse over the head, the horse will not obey, but goes on doing exactly what it pleases and is out from underneath this individual's control. Now, nothing would happen if he hadn't hit the horse over the head, but the actual fact of the matter is he will get a headache. The individual himself will get a headache. He'll find a service facsimile of some sort that will excuse this whole fact, and the second that he fails on number five, he gets the headache he tried to give number five. Only he'll find an actual injury to himself and hang it on himself. This is very observable. Virginia back there is telling me, a young lady, she said she's not going to process anybody with postulate process. You don't mind if I tell this to her. She's not going to postulate process anyone unless the person had some awareness of Dianetics. Because she got a young lady, and this young lady had terrible stomach pains every once in a while, and so she found a time when this young lady had been kicked in the shins and wanted to kick somebody in the stomach and didn't, and was then sick for about 3 days. Well, so she got up that postulate very nicely, and then the young girl promptly postulated it in present time and went to bed sick for 3 days. She promptly postulated all over again. There's no reason to do otherwise. So you see, here is just a wish. Now, this should give you some sort of an insight in how human beings handle other human beings. They handle them actually with theta facsimiles. Now, if they start handling them with all these facsimiles, what's a word? What's a word mean to you? Actually, a word is a symbol of a theta facsimile action that has taken place at some time or another, and you as an individual have been aware of the action which underlies this word, and you use this word for a symbol for that theta facsimile. But actually, when you're talking, you're handing out theta facsimiles. There's a whole stream of them. Now, let your words fail in some regard. You get back to some degree the facsimile you've been trying to hand out, but on a failed basis. You see, you fail. Well, let's take Rosicrucianism. That's a good, silly subject. Fellow sends off his $5,000 or 20 bucks or 50 cents or whatever it is to California. I think it's Los Angeles, which recently got the title of the most aberrated city in the world. And it already had it, but we gave it to them. And we found out there weren't enough people in Los Angeles to be auditors because they were all psychos. Well, anyhow, it was very difficult. And the point in Rosicrucianism is the fellow says, now you're trying to produce an effect on spirits. And if you sit in front of a mirror for a short space of time, 15 minutes a day, you get this little pamphlet that tells you all about it, these deep, dark, horrible mysteries. And you sit in front of the mirror and you look at a candle and you do this and do that. And after a short time, you will see something. You will see something that's quite unusual. As a matter of fact, that's very true. If you sit there long enough, you'll not only see something, you'll get some old counter effort. Because the thing is telling you, slow down, slow down, slow down, slow down. And you slow down, but it's also telling that you slow down one, and they will be able to reach you. Well, now, an individual, you see, happens to be composed of himself and them, too. So the second you say there is a they, and you're not responsible for the they, but the they can do something to you, bow! It's very amusing. As a matter of fact, almost anybody can sit down and refuse to take the responsibility for something, just specifically, and feel a counter effort. Did you ever see a medium sit down and get slapped by spirits? Did you ever see that? Why, now, that's the easiest one of them all. She will, too. She said, spirits exist, and this exists, and that exists, and I'm going to sit here quietly in a trance. And, of course, you have to be careful how you do it, because there are evil spirits, and they will sometimes come around and cuff you. And she knows this out of her own experience, but believe me, it's a convincer. So she'll sit down there quietly, and she'll relax and relax, not taking the responsibility for these counter-efforts, and she'll all of a sudden get one. Now, I've never heard one of these things audible, except when the medium slaps her hands behind her back like that. But I have seen a medium come up with a black eye on this. What she was doing, actually, is she failed to take responsibility for her little brother, punch that gave her a black eye, and so she got the black eye back again. I mean, very simple. These counter efforts exist and are effective on you to the exact degree that you don't take responsibility for them. But we will go over that in the second part of the talk. Now, what I'm getting at is there are then a number of buttons which are interactive amongst these dynamics. There is the trust-distrust button. An individual who does not have good recall, of course, is having trouble with the trust-distrust button. He isn't trusting himself, is he? Because he's not trusting his service facsimiles, because he doesn't trust his recalls. All right, he doesn't trust his recalls, therefore he's not going to get too much out of them. Therefore, he's an occluded case. So he distrusts his own facsimiles. Well, how did he get in that state of affairs? And you're interested in that as an auditor because you want to fix him up so that he can get some of these facsimiles and he can read into them. Now, a little experimentation will demonstrate to you if you can just simply talk a guy's trust up in his facsimiles, just that all by itself, give him a terrific sales talk, first thing you know, he can see his own memories. I mean, that's all by itself, but that is the tough way to go about it. That requires breath and so forth. The best way to go about it, there are several ways, several of these buttons on the trust-distrust, is what happened to him. As he conceived, he made the first error. He conceived himself as an individual and conceived that there was a great deal of strain and conflict between himself and the other dynamics. So, in school, let us say, he found out that he couldn't trust his playmates. So he distrusted them. Then the teacher played a dirty trick on him. And actually, he started out trusting people. But the teacher played a dirty trick on him, and his parents didn't come through with some of their bargains, and life started to look pretty horrible, and he decided not to trust, let us say, anything on the second dynamic, his household. He decided he better not trust them anymore. Actually, he started trusting, so all of a sudden, acts come up that demonstrates to him that he should distrust, and this is a break in consistency. And as a break in consistency, it brings apart a lowering down, not only of that dynamic, but the second he distrusts somebody else, he distrusts himself. Now, we'll take an individual who distrusts on four. He will distrust on one. He'll distrust on four. You will find he not only distrusts on four, but he'll distrust on two, three, five, six, seven, and infinity. You'll find an individual who has started out, somebody gave him a big sales talk, and he became highly religious. And then all of a sudden, one day, he prayed God for a red bicycle, and he got a blue one, which was a break of faith with God. And all of a sudden, boom! He's no trust over here. The second there's no trust here, it's no trust here, it's no trust here, it's no trust here. They all lower down just that much. Because this is life potential. This is ability to handle motion. Ability of the individual to persist, utilize motion, utilize effort, and survive on through his spans of years. And as a result, any time a trust-distrust break occurs, an individual's life potential is dropped just that much. There's a number of these. Another such button is the serious button. The serious button. You follow that track with Preclear and you will discover the most fantastic computations. When he has had to convince people that it was serious, and the reverse, when he's had to convince people it wasn't serious. It was serious, you see, but he had to convince them that it wasn't. And this turns him into a person who perforce has to be very light-minded about everything, has to write for the New Yorker and all sorts of onerous tasks. Now, it can go either way. If you want to solve a case which is much too light-minded and will take no responsibility and so forth, you get the person around that case that has consistently and continually insisted that life was serious. To invalidate this person or to keep one's independence then made it necessary for the individual to say, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Life is not serious at all. Life is gay and happy, and I'm happy, and everybody's happy. Now, it's quite the reverse. You'll find that there are individuals, actually, who consider their work to be onerous and laborious. They've had to convince somebody that their own, that they were some good to society. Well, you can't be any good to society if you're having fun. The only people who are good for society are solemn, long-faced, arduous, hard-working, that carry a red bandana with a hammer and sickle or something. You know, workers. The worker has to be in there slaving, you know, taking care of the wife and children, in spite of the fact that it almost kills him going to that office every morning. As a matter of fact, he has a lot of fun. He goes down to the locker room. They shoot dice for a while after they checked in on the time clock. And then they go up and they stand around these big machines that are running, and they tell a lot of stories to each other. And then they pull a joke or two on the foreman and so forth. And it's noon, and they have a lunch, which they enjoy eating. And, oh boy, have we tailor-made seriousness out of this one. Work. Work is serious. I don't believe there's an individual here tonight who hasn't been told how serious work is. Well, it makes it tough to do. That's all. Actually, it'll make it, a person has to make it tough so that it'll be serious. He's got to go at it the hard way, then, in order to convince people that he is valuable to the family or to the group or to society. If he's really working. In other words, if it takes him 2 months to knock out something he should have been doing in a half an hour, then he's really valuable. This is the computation on it. Work is serious. You'll find, for instance, a fast production writer out in the field has a tough role. He sits down, he does a novel in 7 days, it gets into the magazine, readers read the magazine, they write in a stack of letters of congratulation about this work, and everything is just fine. But boy, you ought to hear from some of the other writers. That story couldn't possibly have been any good because it only took 7 days to write. They're working on a serious computation. I know such a writer who works on one of these serious computations, and actually his stories are perfectly horrible the fifth time he does them. The first time he does them, they're pretty good. I mean, people can read them without gagging. And the first time, but he has to rewrite them 4 times. Because this convinces everybody how serious it is to be a writer. Well, all of his life he's been fighting his family. His family said that writing was light-minded. Of course, I don't know what could be light-minded, actually, even to a commercialized society, which makes a guy a couple of $1,000 every month, for which he only really works about 10 hours. But writing is light-minded. So he has worked through the years. He's finally got this routine worked out where he is just ragged after he finishes the story. He's just dead. He told me one day, I can't understand it. Writing used to be a lot of fun to me, and it used to make me very happy and cheerful to write. But now, for some reason or other, I just barely able to get through it somehow. He's also convincing his wife how hard it is. Because, you see, he actually goes into his office and lies down on the couch and sleeps for about a half an hour after breakfast. And then he gets up and wanders around and he reads a novel. And along about half an hour before lunch, he sits down and he writes about 5 pages. Then he comes up. He's forgotten. It's a pose. And that is the big crime. If you make a pose, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with pretense. As a matter of fact, practically the whole business of living is nothing but a big sham. It's great pretense. But if you make one of these allegations concerning the business of living, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, when you are forced then to accept it yourself, you're stuck. You've got to match up with what you pretended was so, in order to convince somebody else that you aren't a liar, that you are consistent. So here is this individual. Now, this individual could have said, writing is hard work, writing is hard work. He could have told everybody around this up to the moment when he failed to convince somebody. One day, and you as an auditor, rehabilitating almost anybody with this particular serious button, will find that one day he failed. How did he fail? Who did he fail? and he'll start adding it up, and he will all of a sudden remember somebody he was just never able to convince. And it's been hard work ever since. And that particular field, this isn't only just labor, this is any field, that particular field has remained in a bad state ever since that moment, that point of failure. He asserted that something was so, he didn't believe it himself. The assertion which he made happened to be harmful to his own survival, but he thought it would be beneficial, and he failed to make it stick. When he did, he got it. He sent it over here on 3. It didn't stick on 3. It came back on 1. He's hung with it ever since. Now, that is your serious pushback. Who have you had to convince that something was serious? And whom have you had to convince that something was not serious? As a matter of fact, anesthesia and hyper pain sensitivity are on that computation. Anesthesia, and I mean that all the way across the board. Pain doesn't hurt very much. Sensitivity, not there. And sense of touch, almost absence. And as a matter of fact, along with the thing goes sexual pleasure. Anesthesia. It's across the band. The person has had to tell somebody who was concerned about pain that they didn't feel. They said, in order to invalidate this person, go on living with any kind of independence of their own, they've had to consistently and continually say, it doesn't hurt, I feel good, I am all right, because they snivel for a moment, right away they've got to go to bed. And the way to get around this is saying, I'm all right, I don't have a cold. And then they go out and flounder around and get over their cold one way or the other. And it's consistent invalidation of pain and feeling. Consistent invalidation of a human being who insisted there was pain and feeling. And that's the way the auditor gets into it, saying it's not serious, it doesn't hurt. Now, the other way comes about that an individual goes around saying, the individual is surrounded by people who say, oh, that doesn't hurt. Oh, that isn't important, and that doesn't hurt. And in order to make them wrong, the individual has to say consistently, well, it is too. It is painful. I am sick. It is painful, and so on. It does hurt. And you get hypersensitivity. You also get hypersensitivity of feelings. You get somebody who's too sensitive, who is embarrassed too easily. It goes right across the boards like that. In the same person, you can have both computations on separate subjects. Now, it's important in auditing to pick up this button. You'll find out this button's awfully center. It's very, very close in. Because it'll go this far, that when the person has felt pleasure, he then has to excuse it to somebody else as being painful. You get your whole masochism-sadism combination. The individual has advanced occasionally, this is fun, has had this blunted. The child who plays, and mother, father come around, they say, no good, and so on, and you're not having fun, and that's not important, and everything else. The kid has finally decided that the only thing that will get any impression on them whatsoever is pain. And so, pain impresses these people. Therefore, they will even go to the point of, and you can look for this in some of your pre-clears, of taking a pleasant moment in relating to something or other and covering it up with a painful somatic so they can keep it. Reverse it. For instance, trying to convince a group of people that something is fun. Trying to convince them that something is fun, and it works out all right as long as it continues to work, but then one day one fails to convince this group that something is fun. Pain comes into being. You see, 1 played against 3 again. fails on three, fails to convince them it's fun, all of a sudden is unable to convince self that anything is fun. Trying to convince group three that it is painful, it's painful, it's painful, finally it fails, and so on, fails to convince this group that it's painful, goes into more or less a state of apathy on that pain and will hurt himself in the same way. Here is an electrician who is an expert on the subject of how not to get shocked. You read this in the paper the other day, I'm sure. He had given his 10,000th demonstration of how to be safe around a big electrical switchboard. He was electrocuted during a demonstration. He was an expert, and he had demonstrated to groups, and little by little he'd become invalidated about this, invalidated about that. All of a sudden he goes into a state of anatem on the subject. He hasn't convinced them anymore that it's dangerous, and so it suddenly became not dangerous to him. It wasn't that he was trying to prove, that's too simple a computation. He wasn't just trying to prove to them it was dangerous by getting himself killed. The mechanism is more subtle than that. And worked out on that basis, by the way, it won't audit. But it's much more subtle. It's on the basis that he tries to convince them that it's dangerous, tries to convince them to be careful, tries to convince them to be dangerous. He can't convince them. He fails to convince them. And all of a sudden, he can't convince himself that it is. He fails on the first dynamic as he failed on the third. Any failure in this consistency, then, on any dynamic will result in a failure on the first dynamic. The whole moral is don't fail. Now, this serious button is a very important one. The trust-distrust button. But you start looking, thumbing through just words of the English language, and you find a whole tertiary class of buttons that will turn up almost any computation on a case. Those are very centralized computations, though. Very. We'll take this formula. Theta is trying to affect the control of the physical universe. We find out how does an individual suddenly become unable to handle his own theta facsimiles? How does he become unable to handle his own memories so that they become obsessive and compulsive to him? So that his own somatics become painful to him. How does his ability to control this, how does it break down? Now, that'd be a very interesting thing to know, because that's all that's wrong with the case. That's all that's wrong with the case. It is not the amount of physical pain in a person's life, or sorrow, or loss, or anything else. It simply breaks down his ability to handle his own theta facsimiles, his ability to handle his own memories. When he can't handle a certain memory, why, he's in a tough way. It'll start handling him. And this is pretty grim. You'll see people, it'll even go to the point where people will wear glasses. Just because there's some cockeyed theta facsimile sitting here. And they can't handle it. That's all there is to it. They just can't handle his memory. Well, it could be worked out very simply. One could merely say, well, he couldn't handle a thing when it happened to him, so therefore he can't handle it when it gets into present time. That's only a very small part of the answer. There's a much bigger answer. Thank you.